We have no disclosures to, nothing to disclose about financial. So just a little bit of context to tell our story. So Kane County is one of the famous collar counties around the city of Chicago. And so you can see there in the red where we're located. We have the fifth largest county in the state and have the second highest, the largest Hispanic population and the highest ratio of Hispanics in all of our counties in Illinois. Have lots of municipalities, as you can see, and have two very large urban centers. The diversity in our community really highlights the disparities around chronic disease that, and the burden that's disparately falling on that Hispanic population. 69% of the people with high blood pressure are Hispanic. And if you compare Hispanics to non-Hispanics, 65% of the Hispanic hypertensive patients have uncontrolled hypertension versus 47% of the non-Hispanic. Also, Hispanics account for the majority of our diabetic cases in the county. And then when we look at our very small African-American population, again, the disparity and that burden of chronic disease, for example, the diabetics, the most of the uncontrolled, among the 13% of African-Americans with diabetes, 69% of those have A1Cs over 9, greater than 9. So then when you look at the obesity rate among adults, about 64%, and among youth, about 11.5%. We know that we really need to look at this population, this integrated approach to planning that does look at how health is impacted by land use strategies and transportation strategies that say, how do we account for health and how do we make our community a healthier place to live, work, and play? This is an aerial view. And you can again see Kane County. Up at the top, you see Elgin in the north, Aurora down at the bottom in the south. And north of Elgin is a town called Carpentersville. And about 60% of our population live in those three urban centers. Then along the middle of the county is our critical growth area, which is really more of the suburban population. And about 28% of our population lives there. And then if you go over to the western portion of the county, that whole western corridor is our agricultural portion, and only 12% of our population live in that particular part of the community. And yet it's about, what, 55-60% of the county's land. So that gives you a little bit of background on our community. And what really this slide is meant to share is that we really have been fortunate to have had a long history of planning, and the evidence shows that the impact of transportation and land use is tremendous on population health. And so all this planning led to, in the year 2010, our county board passing a resolution that said that conceptual land use strategy needs to involve health. And so really having that in statute made a big difference for our efforts. This slide here just kind of tells you the story we're going to tell you, that we started way back in 1913 when the Transportation Division was created and went along this timeline where a regional planning commission was created, where the Kane County Health Department was created, when in 2004 the board actually integrated land use and transportation, so you have the green and the purple there, and then the 2008 Fit for Kids initiative that we'll talk about in a moment actually brought health into the integrated approach, and then the 2010 to 2012 period where the county board actually integrated the three in a formal way. Ending up with the story we're telling today about the launch of the Kane County Planning Cooperative.
Good morning, and to underscore the tag team, we're tag team, and to underscore the partnerships, we generally do this locally. We have someone from our transportation division, so they're not really a silent partner, they're an actual partner, so I'm going to be filling in on some of their information. But they, like Teresa mentioned, they have a 100-year history, so I guess they really started out of the gate first. When they formed in 1913, King County had no paved roads. And within the tenure of the first director, paved almost all the county highway. The county highway system is one of the few pieces of leverage that the county has over working with municipalities on land use issues. And in case you're not aware of it, and it may vary from state to state, but our county division of transportation uses federal, state, and local funds. They are able to work with the Council of Mayors and with funds for bicycle planning, pedestrian planning, transit planning. We're on this, the edge, so we do have a PACE bus service and several metro stops for rail into the city of Chicago. So it is more comprehensive just than highway planning. And second partner in on this was in land use. Actually, in 1937, King County was one of the first counties in the state to adopt the zoning ordinance, which is a form of land use control. And then in the 50s, started the regional planning program, which also was one of the first ones in the state of Illinois. And in our recent update of the plans, we look back at some of those early plans and goals, and I was interested to pull out that in 1967, one of the four major planning goals for the county was to have every person have the right to live and work in an attractive and healthful environment. So health isn't entirely new to our roots. Our 2040 plan, which you're going to hear a lot more about, is an update to a series of plans. The most groundbreaking one was back in 1996, when the county really aggressively looked at open space planning and farmland protection. And then in 2004, as Teresa mentioned, that was really a combination with the adoption of our transportation plans, again, making that conscious effort that transportation and land use planning are connected. And then in 2010, as you'll hear a lot about, our connection with health. And one of the things we are known for being right on the urban edge and fast growing is that it is a stated goal to keep 50% of the county in agriculture and open space. And that's a conceptual land use strategy map. It kind of, in simplified color form, shows those three areas that Teresa described.
So a quick story, because one community story is one community story. The health department in King County is pretty much of a, still in its early days. We were only created in 1985 as a result of a county board resolution. This was a county that was largely rural for many years, and with the two urban centers we talked about, those two urban centers were taking care of things like WIC, restaurant inspections, well-child clinics, and the like. So there wasn't a perceived need for a health department and more government. As time went on, with three failed referendums for a health department, needs began to grow as the community began to grow, particularly as the community began to fill in the middle of the county. And so really, food safety and tuberculosis were two reasons why the county board created a health department once our Illinois legislature made it possible to do so by resolution. So what's important about this story is that at the time, that community board wanted something in particular, and they became our board of health. So our challenge today is the same as it was when we began. What's important to this group that really shapes policy, which really is going to have impact on how land use and transportation and population health are going to be integrated? And so really having that historical beginning keeps us very focused as we move forward on how we really need to engage that group. In terms of planning, as you know, Mark just talked about planning for the long, rich history, then as a new health department, we always had our Illinois process every 5 years of really doing a community assessment and building an implementation plan. And we've gone through several cycles. And in fact, the one that we are in right now, the plan was adopted. And actually, again, we have to just, you know, tip my hat to Paul, who actually helped bring all of our partners together who are also doing community assessment and really pooled resources, not only for paying for the most robust community assessment that I think we've ever done, but also the shared planning based on shared analysis, really looking to see how our hospitals' community benefit plans could be integrated into the planning, and actually looking at this three-prong integrated approach of land use, transportation, and health. So it's not the health department and the transportation department and the development department, it's really our community coming together and really growing into this concept of shared and pooled planning and integrated work. This work in 2007, right now, if you ask most of our stakeholders and partners, almost anyone in the community can say that our vision is to have the healthiest residents in Illinois. It is more of a household, I shouldn't say household word, a stakeholder word in the community than ever before. I've been with the health department about 17 years, and 17 years ago, this could never be said. What happened, again, was some strategic leadership of bringing together not only stakeholders and our community coalition leaders, but also our elected officials, those that are representative of the whole community and elected as well. Not health experts, but community experts, and the ones who really are going to set policy. And so having this vision adopted by the leaders and then really raised up, and the awareness and the adoption by consensus in the community is vital to our efforts. And then the last thing I want to say before I turn this back to Mark is that really broadening the focus to look at the social determinants of health has been one of the most important features in our ability to do this integrated planning and really to get more juice out of the integration of transportation, land use, and health. And as you can see circled there, the policies that promote the healthier homes, neighborhoods, schools, and workplaces really comes out of that part of living and working conditions in home and community. All of these sectors combine to really the health and well-being. While we highlight the one in purple, it's all integrated.
I'm going to talk a little bit about why this was critical for Kane County. As Teresa pointed out, the county board serves both as the Board of Health and the Kane County Board for a whole variety of other decisions, including land use. And for the health department, under Paul's leadership and other staff, to help them fully understand that chart that Teresa just had up, showing that health is not just about health care, but there's a lot of factors that affect the health of our communities. Get them a grasp of that, then it's an easy tie to point to our future, where by the year 2040, we're going to add another 270,000 people. So is how we build our communities important to the health of our residents long-term? Absolutely, and this really helps to underscore that. The other aspect that's unique in Kane County is 90% of the land use decisions for accommodating that increase in population and changes to our built environment are not going to happen by county board decisions, but by municipalities. We have 30 different municipalities that have a presence in our county borders, and all 30 of those mayors, city councils, planning commissions, those are the people that are going to be making those decisions on how new areas are developed and how redevelopment occurs. And county board does not have a veto or a say or much of a comment on that. So we're mainly in the position of influence and leadership. The county has done that over the years with each plan that adapted back in 1994. County board followed it up with our workshop series, again targeting those municipal leaders and decision makers. After the first plan, 2020 plan, 2030 plan, and then leading up to the 2040 plan. And I'm not going to dwell on each of these, but just want to, again, kind of point out that strategic leadership of bringing these ideas to focus about conservation design, land use, transportation, smart growth, were all things from 99 through 2003, and then 2004 through 07, talking about housing challenge, water supply, again, things that were critical for the growth and sustainability of our communities.
So then in 2008, the Fit for Kids initiative, Making King County Fit for Kids campaign was launched. And this was really to address the growing epidemic of childhood obesity. And as we look back, you know, you always can see so much more clearly when you look back. This initiative, really, I talk about it as, jokingly, the shoehorn for integrated planning in our community, because this was a time when now health, land use, transportation were intentionally partnering to look at how we might together reverse this childhood epidemic. And again, this was strategic leadership at the at all three of these department levels, and the strategic leadership to say, how can we do this together? How can we, even though we collaborate and we coordinate, how will we actually integrate so that this is no longer a health thing, or this is no longer a land use thing or a transportation thing, but this is something we do together. So as this Making King County Fit for Kids initiative was launched, you can see on the slide, and I won't read it, that we had some strategic action principles that were adopted and that were driving everything that went on. And these strategic principles actually ended up being part of that 2010 resolution that I mentioned earlier that the county board adopted in terms of integrated planning. A funders consortium was created then to have a public-private partnership that would bring together funding that would help to drive policy change, system change, and built environmental changes that would help to make the healthy choice the easy choice, which is a phrase that I learned as I worked in this partnership. We also, through this funder consortium, were able to give local funds right at the very beginning, about $160,000, to help to put in place coalitions for Fit for Kids. There were three coalitions that were funded at the beginning, one in the north, one in the south, one in the middle of our long county, and then later for some mini-grants to help to drive some of those system policy and environmental changes. The making the healthy choice the easy choice actually is all about not only the strategic planning but also the fiscal planning. Then Mark had talked about the series of workshops, and we found that this 10th workshop on smart growth as healthy living that was hosted in 2009, this was the first healthy community workshop. And it was actually brought Dr. Richard Jackson to our community and brought so many of the leaders and the planners among many sectors in the community, not only the traditional land use planners, but our park districts and our schools, our libraries, our youth, our community colleges. So it was really an experience of how we together make King County fit for kids. And then in 2009, we were fortunate enough to get the Robert Wood Johnson funding. This gave us about $90,000 a year. And that $90,000 facilitated our campaign, provided partial funding, actually directly for planners in the land use area, and also a coordinator for our Fit for Kids campaign. Now, as Mark and I talk about this, this was a tremendous gift and continues to be a blessing. We're in our fourth year of funding because we've gotten so much support and expertise through that partnership and through the rigorous action planning and evaluation, really helping us to stay forward thinking on track and cutting edge. But we think it's important to stop and say at this slide that it's not just about getting this kind of funding, that the principles of really bringing the leaders together of all these different planning, what can be sometimes planning silos, bringing them together is the first and most important thing. And typically, when we work together, we are able to leverage and find other resources, right? So that is the really important part of this slide. And part of the grant funds were also used for that 2040 land use plan that we've been talking about as well. And so I just want to focus for a moment on that Kids 2020 plan, because as I said, it's kind of like was the shoehorn for how we got everyone together and thinking and doing integrated planning. So there were 9 sector specific work groups that came together to write Fit for Kids plan. I'm sorry, I only have this dog-eared copy. You know, we use this a lot, but this actually contains just all kinds of ideas for not only what you can do if you're from the school sector or if you're from the food policy sector, but actually is sprinkled throughout with bright spots. But at the time this plan was written, what's already going on in our community, highlighting through change theory that if you tell people what works, then it's really possible and it's really there in your community. You find those bright spots. And so that was actually integrated into the plan right along with the strategic principles and the action plans. So this is our roadmap for anyone in the community to pick up, whether I'm a parent, a planner, an elected official, and say, this is what I can do so that this is what we can do. So this was an important learning curve for us before we began the project that we are talking about today.
Not only was it critical for actually having the team start to work together, but I noticed a number of you said you've been involved in some kind of planning, either in the past or want to be, but then you know that if you had this the size of a crowd at a public hearing for any kind of a plan, you'd be ecstatic, because so many people showed up to comment on your plan. And I point that out because it is a struggle in planning in this day and age to get people out. And what we found in working with the Fit for Kids process is it brought a whole bunch of new people and energy to the planning process. These were people who are passionate about the health of their kids and can see how changes need to happen in their community, but they haven't made that direct link to what's going to happen down at City Hall at Planning Commission meetings. So, number one, we reached a lot of people in the community that way. The other thing was in our combined planning efforts, we really use that as the basis for launching our 3 planned community involvement for adapting the new plans that we had to for land use, the community health improvement plan, and the transportation plans. So, you know, one step of that was a conceptual land use strategy report. This had been something that the Regional Planning Commission had done prior to the other plans, basically to make sure the county board was good with the direction. One thing that happens in this timeline, there are election cycles. So even though some of us as staff remain consistent through this process, although we had a lot of turnover even at our county board level. So each step of the way, having a strategy of saying, this is where you're at, this is where you come from, this is where you're at, this is where previous boards have said you're heading, let's confirm that before we take another step. So that was a big part of this piece, as well as confirming that introduction of health. So we had our second workshop. We really used that as the coming out party for the Fit Kids 2020 plan, the conceptual land use strategy, and then transportation was just starting their process of updating their plan. So for them to come out and say, you know, not only are we going to be doing our traditional transportation planning efforts for highways, pedestrian, and transit, but we are going to be vested in and incorporating what's coming out of the Fit Kids plan and what's coming out of the conceptual land use strategy. So the county board embraced that, and to underscore that, we had the plans adapted together in short succession. So community health improvement plan and transportation plans were adapted together in 1 month, with the other land use plan and map being adapted the following month. The transportation plan, you know, we are so excited that we have such a forward-thinking transportation chief engineer and staff who get it about transit and have been very forward-thinking in the bicycle pedestrian planning and leading our communities. So that's something that has been very, very helpful. They have sort of a different ear and a different leverage with our municipalities because we have one major north-south county highway that everybody wants access to. So that's one of our leverages. And they've really gone that extra mile to say, you know, we are, as we look at transportation planning, about supporting active living and land use in the projects that they do, from either getting funding for bus stops that are more attractive for transit or pedestrian overpasses and underpasses under some of our major county highways.
So the current community health improvement plan, as you can see, has four priorities. There's actually 16 strategies, but four high-level priorities. And you can see that it does include this support and creation of health-promoting neighborhoods, towns, and cities. Again, underlying this are the social determinants of health, very broad and comprehensive. Our 2040 plan that Mark said also was just approved also actually identified healthy populations specifically as one of the challenges and one of the goals that we're working for. And in fact, the 2040 plan does include a whole chapter on health, which is the very first time that the 2040 plan had a chapter on health. And I believe at this time it's still the only county in Illinois that has such a chapter. So our plan really introduced folks to the healthy people, healthy living, healthy communities concepts, things like planning for healthy results really being a standard at the local level, access to safe water, healthy foods, you know, saying let's not restrict this to where you might live or what your socioeconomic status is. Let's make sure we lift those restrictions and have access for all. And really try to work to assure that the built environment really promotes physical activity and does not restrict it. So our implementation strategy for the 2040 plan, as you can see, is a kind of a four-step conceptualization. One of them really creating this Kane County Planning Cooperative and then continuing that planning workshop series, making sure that our decisions for funding are consistent with our goals and that we really have a high level of coordination and collaboration with our municipalities. Looking at some of the,
I was going to be polite and just let her talk over my slides.
Sorry,
I'll probably do that to you as well. One thing I did want to point out with this is, in case it's probably not obvious, a lot of communities hire consultants and spend upwards of $100,000 to have a plan written. Kane County is on all three of those plans. We've had that written by staff. And this in particular was really a collaboration and contributed by staffs of all three departments. So they're color, you know, you're probably following our color coding by now. Purple is transportation and green is land use. But I did that just to kind of underscore that those chapters were really heavily contributed and written by staff from those other departments. So there really was a lot of interaction in that. We were grateful to have funding from Robert Johnson Foundation because we were doing that in-house, but we literally saved our taxpayers tens of thousands of dollars by doing it in-house. Again, with the implementation strategy, strategies 2, 3, and 4 were carryovers from the previous plan, but we realized that with the change in the economy and the real goals of trying to get the health message out there, that we had a couple of things that were unique in time to Kane County right now, and really came up with this new idea of forming a Kane County Planning Cooperative, utilizing a lot of ideas and things that the county was already involved in doing, but there really was no sort of organization or label to it. You couldn't give a five-minute elevator talk about what the county was doing to improve the built environment in our 30 municipalities. We also realized that we had some really unique issues. Again, we had stalled developments. These were things that we saw, and we'll get into how we got feedback. But we knew there was model ordinances needed for some of the emerging issues. The professional planning staff countywide had been reduced by more than half, and those that were left were doing things like property maintenance and dealing with foreclosed homes rather than long-range planning. There's a lot of interjurisdictional, you know, you can tell from the map, jurisdictional projects that have to happen. That takes time from staff. We really wanted to get exposure to our municipalities by using health impact assessments, and then just a lot of shortage of available professional planning resources, and of course the all-important one, funding. So that planning cooperative really became that central core to talk about integrated planning, gave us that opportunity to do that, to begin to address those gaps we identified, and really provide educational opportunities close by. Chicago is a great resource. Our regional planning agency does a lot of things, but that's a pretty much a day trip in and out to do that. We could bring some of those resources and make them more accessible to our community leaders. And they really wanted to engage all the agencies involved in planning. Illinois has the distinction of having more non-contiguous layers of local government than any other state in the country. So wrap your arms around that one. So that means planning is really difficult when your library districts, fire districts, school districts, everybody has different boundaries even, you know, so to figure out, you know, how they all work together. So I really wanted to bring them into the fold as well, something we're still working on. And then have it open to everyone. We'd love to get, you know, the planning commissioner who, you know, never really got any training, you know, but really is interested in a specific topic to show up and get drawn into this discussion of integrating health.
So all of this led up to then the ability for King County to compete for one of the APHA Power Policy Awards, and we were fortunate to be selected, and we are so grateful to the APHA for this. It did include a $40,000 award, which the health department was able to manage, but those funds actually were used to launch the that planning cooperative that had been put into the recently published master plan, the 2040 plan. So really we wanted to have these funds do three different things. We wanted to establish that planning cooperative so that it was really something that was both county and municipal and civic implementation. We wanted to award some mini grants for trying to implement some of those health goals that we wrote in for the first time into that land use 2040 plan. And then we wanted to make sure that we took a look at, well, what happened? How did this work? And so really building in an evaluation into that. So as you can see from this slide, King County Regional Planning Commission that was started many, many years ago and is recognized by statute as the recommending body for countywide planning is really a lead and important part of this planning cooperative. Just recently, we actually have a health professional who's been appointed to that Regional Planning Commission for the very first time, showing, again, the impact of really working at this together. And the planning cooperative really being a way to influence partners and work together, as Mark just said. So you can see the partners that are listed down below, as well as some of the key issues that Mark's already described. Now, we did decide to actually launch the planning cooperative by having a kickoff meeting that really brought everyone to the table. So to really have that happen, all of our departments and all of our many, many coalitions were invited to the table. And we wanted to not only describe this new master plan and what we hoped for from the planning cooperative, but to get their input, their feedback. And we wanted to also share the news about the mini grants, because those mini grants really gave us the opportunity to sort of showcase and really show some stories of what might happen and how we might, in a very concrete, tangible way, make some changes in policy and in the built environment or in the system that were sustainable and long-lasting. You can see from these pictures here that we did have in June this first planning co-op meeting, a lot of interaction, a lot of sharing. People that were at the table may never have met each other before. So you have someone, I remember sitting at a table with someone from a library, someone from a park district, a private developer, and an architect. It certainly were way out of my disciplinary I never had had that kind of interaction before. And that happened at table after table after table. So we really wanted that investment of the community in this way, and using that interactive process, again, we felt really empowered the participants and actually empowered all of us who were trying to get this new concept to become a reality. As they identify topics here, as you can see, some of those that they identified, that there was just all kinds of issues that were bubbling up, and now we had the happy challenge of trying to look to see how do we integrate our approaches to respond and to keep the, our partners engaged in things that they were interested in, but also that would move us along towards that system change, policy change, and environmental change. At our second meeting, we also had one of the key, the top things that the first meeting brought about was the topic of failed developments or stalled developments. So we wanted to make sure we took what they were interested in and started with that. And so we were able to bring together lots of technical assistance and a place for people to share possible solutions and really have dialogue around that topic. We talked about these meetings where everyone came together at the same table. Well, we took the other approach as well, and we went out. So representatives and planners from all three of our departments actually went and visited the municipality, sat down with their mayor, their chief planners, and whoever else they wanted to bring to their table, and were able to identify what the goals were, what they understood about the master plan and the, this concept of integrated planning, and really begin to start to have together a joint list. So having that one-on-one interaction was just as important, we think, as having everybody come to the table together. And it helped us as an integrated team to understand all the nuances. Now, to speak a little bit about the mini-grants that we put together. The six policies here were the six themes that had been in the master plan around health. And so in order to qualify for a mini grant, one of these topics had to be addressed. We were also looking to be sure that in terms of eligibility, that people got an understanding of what this meant. For many of our traditional planners, maybe this was new. And so it wasn't just a matter of putting out a RFP and waiting till everybody was ready to go. One of the things we recognized is we had a very short turnaround time for this grant and to get these mini grants going. And for those of you who are planners, you know, you don't usually think in a few months. So we looked carefully at looking at four different categories so that someone who was applying could just look at one of these four stages of planning. We weren't looking for the whole beginning to end. And that was really important to really get folks interested and able to apply. We were looking at not only some match money was involved, 50-50 match money. It could be either cash or in kind. Came into selecting these sub-grant awardees, but also looking at how much of our vulnerable population might be impacted, as well as the community as a whole. We were hoping by selecting folks that could really carry out, you know, we had to really look, could they carry it out in the short amount of time? And so these organizations actually got funded. And as you can see, looking at trails planning, the Village of Campton Hills really did a lot to look to even see what were the barriers and the obstacles, for example, to actually having all their trails connected. They had about 80 miles of roadway that they even had to identify jurisdiction. So a lot of issues around just getting ready for that trails planning and having a plan ready to implement. The Active Transportation Alliance had their a tool for analysis of the accessibility for anyone, no matter what mode of travel, looking at amenities in the station and make sure that looking at the access for disabled individuals. Our community garden network in Elgin had a wonderful network, but people didn't know about it. And so one of their planning pieces, well, how do we make this awareness raised about our gardens and how do we get the word out in the neighborhoods? Many of the gardens in Elgin actually give their produce to local food pantries. And so really engaging the community in the physical activity of gardening and also in access to fresh fruits and vegetables was a large part of this project. The St. Charles Park District had two projects. One was really looking at a trail action plan. They did some engineering to determine the trail length and development a quick response code that hikers could use to get around the trails. And as you can see, the development of plans for fitness kiosks at their parks. They also had a set of community gardens that they wanted to put into the Riverbend Community Park, but they had no water. And so one of their projects was to really look at how they might put some water system in to allow having community gardens. And finally, King County actually participated as well with some walkability planning in the unincorporated areas. So we really got around into the community.
Yeah, some of your backgrounds are like mine as an architect. You're used to, you know, this long process of planning and development and refinement and then funding and construction, and finally you cut that ribbon at the end. And one of the things I learned through working with the Fit for Kids and the consortium especially, they got these mini grants out there and things happened quickly and there was results and people were excited. And so that's something I personally learned from being part of that process and wanted to bring into what we are doing with our long range planning. And then the other aspect of just with the realities of the economy right now and funding is that you can't really look at the whole project because it's just too big to bite off. So with these mini grants, we really looked at, well, what can we do that just moves the ball down the field? How can we get them from, you know, A to B or D to E or, you know, whatever? Or maybe get them more competitive for funding when it becomes available, kind of pre-planning grants. So one of the things we realized as we were looking at these is that we do have large areas of unincorporated county that we are, as a county staff, very directly involved with, responsible for. And we have a lot of neighborhoods, particularly around Aurora, that are unincorporated and not very walkable. So what we undertook was to take a look at doing walkability studies in three of our urban townships. And our planners really had a lot of fun taking this on and working with the community, following some of the models that we learned from the Fit Kids grants as well. And I'm just going to quickly show you some of the map products, but they went to township meetings and got input from township highway department and supervisors. Division of Transportation had accident and crash data for bicycles and vehicles, so identified schools and health clinics and things that people may need to walk to. And they really developed a number of different areas that over time the township would like to, people would like to have more walkable. And then basically identified a priority area to rise to the top of those multiple scenarios to take a look at. Here you've got a couple schools and a community garden site and some problem intersections, and then really take a section of that and say really what is what's there and what can be done in the very short term to improve the walkability and safety. And we did that in three different townships and then presented those results to the county board and the townships, and they can now use these studies if there's an opportunity for grant funding, whether it be through Park District or even through one of the hospitals with their improvement plan that now has the built environment goal in there as well, and say we'd like to get this connection done and over time begin to improve that. So the APHA funds were just one of the things that helped support our effort that we're very grateful for. A couple other ones I'm just going to touch on with the Planning Cooperative. One is a health impact assessment that we're able to do, and then Kind of the pleasant surprise was really how well we've been able to leverage what we're trying to do with the cooperative working with our regional planning agency. So we were able to get a health impact assessment. Our goal was to look at what the assessment would be if we increase local food production. As you see, we have a lot of farmland, but in the recent decades, most of that has been used for corn and soybeans and cash crops and things going out of the county as opposed to actually as it did up until, you know, maybe the 50s or 60s, really help support and provide local food supply. So how could we turn that corner and really get more of that food accessible? One of the reasons we were competitive for getting that grant was because we were going to get trained from the Health Impact Project and then in turn be able to use that training through our planning cooperative to promote the use of HIA. Is everyone here familiar with HIA? Yeah, Health Impact Assessment. Okay. And then the other nice surprise was CMAP, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, has a local technical assistance program. They started just ahead of the planning cooperative time frame, and we were pretty competitive in the first round, but in the second and third rounds, which have just been announced, we had 8 out of 14 submitted projects and 7 out of 10 submitted projects by the county and our municipalities that have been awarded local technical assistance. And the estimate on the value of all that planning assistance in 3 years has been $1.2 million. So it really begins to add up. Two of the projects that we're working directly with CMAP staff on is what we call a Homes for a Change in Region study that involves 8 of our communities all together, but really looks at the housing needs of the community in the future and also gives us another opportunity to insert, you know, the health aspects of how the communities are designed. And then just announced in the last week and a half, we're going to be doing a project in 2014 with CMAP. We're going to train them on how to use HIA, but in the platform for doing that is we're going to select a municipality and a policy or project to do the HIA. So, you know, again, the idea of bringing a lot of different resources to the table. These are just some of the projects that are kind of ongoing. We have the workshops, monthly newsletter, the HIA green infrastructure plan that we developed, again using the planning cooperative for input, primary transit network, a couple comprehensive plans we're able to work on with our communities and have health chapters in their plans as well. This is just a brief overview of our workshop schedule that we've had. Our next one coming up on November 15th is we're calling Pathways to Healthier Communities. Our first one is very specifically where to respond to identified needs that were very direct from the municipalities, but it gives us the ability to continue to do that, but also make sure, you know, that we insert health into that as well. So this next meeting is going to be kind of a celebration of some of the bright spots or projects that have happened in our communities. Let them show it off a little bit, as well as just continue to bring that that health integration message. Our newsletter, Constant Contacts, has been a great tool to send that out. We know it's working because we get some of the diverse people that we get to these meetings and people interested, but also use it to provide a lot of easy links to resources that we may get nationally or statewide or even regionally into our planning office that your local plan commission member, village president, or whatever might not have access to. And then evaluation, and this is something I've really learned to appreciate coming out of the public health world, is the idea of you do something and then you evaluate it. Well, as an architect, if the roof doesn't leak, you know, who cares, right? no, seriously, in terms of actually having a process for evaluating, one of the other real benefits of our grant from APHA was it included evaluation, and we partnered with Northern Illinois University to do that. So I'm going to go over some of the key findings that we had. One key finding was that a regional planning commission does view the cooperative as a critical vehicle for educating municipalities. So we really got that level of buy-in. We've been for 3 years pounding the regional planning commission with this idea of health, transportation, and land use, and they really like the idea of the cooperative as the vehicle for getting that out there. In the past, they used to hold joint meetings with different planning commissions, and those were more or less, you know, effective, but they really like this new idea. for outreach. Another one, as I mentioned, with turnovers and elections and everything, new partners are going to continuously need to be recruited and engaged. Plus, there's just, you know, we just begin to scratch the surface of really getting the potential partners involved. Successes and results are going to need to be tracked and communicated. You know, that's a real challenge. It's hard enough planning for the next event without circling back and communicating what were the results, what were the successes that happened. And then also doing things that specifically model good behavior, good solid planning to other communities. And again, that's some of the goals with some of the things that we are selecting, again, strategically, and then wanting to hold that up as a model to other communities to say, you can do this. And even if we develop a model ordinance or something that makes it easier for them to do it, that's important as well. So, again, with changing turnover and new elected officials, this was a real nice boost for us. Again, just in the last month, received a statewide American Planning Association award calling what we're doing a best practice. So to take that back to our county board, give it to them and say, hey, what you're doing is a best practice recognized statewide. Definitely, you know, if they didn't know what they were doing, they know now. And most of them do, but it does just help underscore, especially with the wide variety of things that board members and any elected official is asked to do. You know, this is just one slice of that huge pie, and to have that be a really nice, shiny slice definitely helps. And then the other thing we've been able to do is to get out to groups like this and talk about it, but our main passion and reason for doing this isn't just to talk about what we've done, but really to continue to learn and get feedback and find out from you all what's working in your communities. And if you see, you know, that puzzle piece that we haven't had a time or maybe, you know, had a blind eye to that we haven't seen yet that we could consider, we want to continue to learn and get feedback.
So the lessons learned and the challenges, and then we'd like to get some questions and some discussion from you all to help to kind of help the dialogue and help us to learn as well as to share our story. What we found is that we really, you have to keep in mind that you are doing capacity building. You're not just implementing a project. And you have a different approach when you're taking a capacity building vision and realizing that, for example, when we put the word out about the mini grants and launched that, we had to do a lot of mentoring. There was tons of technical assistance because a lot of the traditional planners had never done an incorporation of health into a policy or into a plan in a very specific way. And so there was even among some of the partners, well, can we do this? We did have a short turnaround time, and so that made that piece of it even more critical. So whether it's at the leader level or at the implementation level, that capacity building piece. The other thing is that we really are integrating disciplines. We all have our different perspectives and priorities and sometimes our own turf, and really letting go of those because now we have a new vision and our own new boundaries together is really critical. So it is something you got to think about as you go forward. Mark already talked about this, the challenges because of turnover. So it is this ongoing, until we really institutionalize this, and this becomes part of the fabric of who we are and what we do across all of our leadership, across our whole 500,000 folks, this is something that's a challenge for us, and we can't let go of that. We have to have the end in mind that we're trying to create this fabric. Collaborative processes, we know it's really hard to write a grant application or really put a plan together. It takes so much time, and it takes even more when you have a collaborative approach. And yet we find that even in those collaborative approaches that fail in terms of finding funding for that specific project, they are actually successful because we move that level of understanding of working together of what that next goal is going to be, and we're even more ready for the next opportunity. challenging around fiscal constraints. Actually, the planning co-op actually offers, even in this time when many of our municipalities have lost some of their funding for planners and lost that capacity, because we're pooling resources, we're actually helping to reverse. And so really approaching the challenge in this backhanded way is something that is that we've kept in mind. Our language, oh my gosh. Right, Mark? How many conversations have we had? It's not just the words and the acronyms, although that's important too. I was just in Madison with Mark last week, and I had to lean over and say, what's BMT? So it's not just the actual words, it's the what goes behind them and how they work together, that interdisciplinary approach. And the challenge, you know, how to evaluate. Well, here's this nice grid of how our county rankings are evaluated. Well, it isn't such a grid for really evaluating how this kind of a process has to go forward. And while our colleagues at Northern Illinois University helped to evaluate the specific launch of how we got started, we are now in the process of developing what are the evaluation goals and the objectives, and how are we going to measure a year from now, how can Mark and I turn to each other and to our colleagues and say, this is where we've succeeded, this is where we failed, and this is where we need to improve. So that's a challenge for us. Really, the challenge of keeping all of our municipalities interested and engaged is so critical. As Mark mentioned, 90% of the land use decisions are theirs. And so that mentoring model, as opposed to, you know, this is what the plan says, and then for people to say, you know what, I belong to this planning cooperative, and here's the vision, and this is how we'd like to carry this out. We see this as something that can help them in their individual funding endeavors by belonging to a cooperative. So as we move forward, and the future is now, you know, the future is not, you know, next year. The future is now. And we're finding that now that we got through that initial launch and that initial set of projects, and as we move forward to some of these exciting opportunities like the HIA project that Mark described, we are finding that our own internal relationships to other boards and other committees, King County is like the king of coalitions. We have coalitions system level for so many things. How do we make sure not only that those members are part of this, but that the decision-making and advisory bodies are part of this as well? And finally, our internal operations. How do those planners from all three departments work together? How do decisions get made? How does communication occur in a very consistent and thoughtful and intentional way? How do we start to plan for our new plans and where we need to go? So we're actually still building this framework as we go. And the communication Mark already talked about, so we're really looking to say, does our communication really reflect the message about integrated planning and the value and the impact? We talked at the beginning about hypertension and obesity and diabetes, and there's other chronic diseases that are burdening our community. So how are we at communicating this success and how population health is really being impacted? This is our future. You see the children there. This is actually a shot from one of our walk to school day last year. But how do we become accountable to our children and our grandchildren? And it's only if this experience and our vision of having the healthiest residents in Illinois is something that is a day-to-day operation. So at this point, Mark and I would just love to entertain not just questions, but any kind of comments or insight or wisdom that the folks here today can share.
Resource and call on us as experts. So I'm wondering how we forge that relationship.
Sure. Well, over time, our Regional Planning Commission has had a great relationship with staff and with the county board, so there's been kind of a pass-through level of trust or a triangular level of trust. So when we began to introduce the idea of health, they really began to embrace that pretty quickly. I know Paul was a big part of that. My predecessor was a big part of that as well. And Paul, I don't know, maybe Paul remember some specific things that may have been done to help them realize that connection. I think that first workshop, as I recall, was pretty key because when Dr. Richard Jackson came out, if you ever heard him speak, he's very entertaining as well as good. It was really kind of a shock and awe kind of approach, and he does a great job of storytelling, you know, that the difference in how our communities have changed our children's, you know, behavior and other things in our culture that are doing that. And they all just kind of, you know, got that. So they're hearing it internally from staff that they trusted. They're hearing it externally from national experts and data and things, and began to then challenge was to say, well, you know, we can, and then how can we make a difference locally and buy into that. I don't know if that's helping to ask your question or not, but you know, assuming that your Regional Planning Commission has, you know, a vision and interest in shaping the community better for the future, I think a key part of that was for us, because we, you know, even though we're in a low growth mode because of the economy, we're still going to grow, and they all experienced the high growth we had over the last two decades. So they get that, you know, that once you lay all that concrete and build the roads and everything, that it's kind of there and it's very expensive to change. And that, boy, if we can influence everyone to do it differently, we can alter, you know, the some of the health outcomes. Does that help?
I've noticed the water issue, water resources, and I know if you're dealing with a 50% agricultural system, there's got to be some air quality, water quality issues around pesticides and agricultural practices as well as industry that maybe you're downwind from. I'm just wondering if that's part of the larger discussion in terms of health issues.
Yeah, it certainly is, and we didn't touch on it, but we in this presentation, but we also have a great relationship with our Farm Bureau. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the National Farm Bureau Association. It's, you know, there's different associations. The strongest one in Kane County is that group, and really working with them on developing the understanding of best practices for water resources and erosion control and buffers. The county board has been very supportive of agriculture, you know, and the right to farm activities in the past, and in turn, they've reciprocated by being open to those kind of discussions in terms of how, you know, what the farm agricultural community is doing in close proximity to, you know, a population, and understand that they're very progressive in terms of, you know, my perception of where a lot of different, you know, agricultural communities are at, and very open to discussion with the health department and with our water resources department.
And our county just established a new agriculture committee, so really bringing that into a specific oversight for our King County board, which is the board itself as well.
Like, to give you an idea, our King County Farm Bureau last year received a national award, usually just given to states or national agencies, but it was at the county level for their Harvest for All program, where the farmers donate food or profits from part of their crop directly to the Northern Illinois Food Bank, and they just passed the $1 million mark in terms of the number, the value of food and money that's been contributed. So very direct tie to our urban population and our disadvantaged families.
And while this isn't water quality, with the HIA project that Mark just mentioned, working with the Farm Bureau was one of the major reasons why we got our new ordinance, because that group helped us to partner with the right people in the community to see what they needed. And one of the issues in our HIA really focused in on some of the economic issues that the Farm Bureau helped us to say, hey, get this addressed. So having that partner at the table in that
card would actually apply to any of the water issues as well.
I have a couple questions. They're kind of related. One about the agent or the planning for the community change in housing or whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're working in a community where there are a lot of dispersed subdivision areas that were built to county standards that are populated by, you know, single family homes, and they're far flung up in the exurban region. That I wonder if they're going to lose value over time in terms of baby boomers aging and that housing stock not being attractive to younger people, and what the housing stock is that's going to be available to people, millennials, when they have children, because there are no three bedroom condos or apartments in Seattle or King County or in the attractive center within financial reach for most people. And I see this gap that's going to happen, and I wondered if that was something you've dealt with, because related to smart growth, there are a lot of obvious barriers to just continuing to expand to the west. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we even expand where we have obvious barriers, like unstable slopes and floodplains. We still seem to build there, even though we have a lot of stricter standards in Washington from that perspective. I mean, but so I'm just curious about that tension between the smart growth principles and that's two questions, and the aging population and the needs of the younger generation.
Sure. Yeah, actually, the Homes for a Change in Region is a whole presentation itself, but it's something that CMAP and the Metropolitan Planning Council have really formed. It's, my understanding, it's pretty unique in the nation, so it's worth taking a look at online if you're interested. But the approach of looking at a community and identifying what their existing housing stock, what their potential is based on their zoning and available land use, and then looking at what the projections would be for the need and demand, both for rental and home or occupied, for the different age demographics. So it really identifies those gaps. So it's like you have this many single family homes in those neighborhoods, and this is the demand in 20, 30 years, and either have an overabundance or you have a gap, and identifying where those gaps are, you know, again, by renter, by age, by whatever, and then saying, you know, now you can make some policy decisions on your zoning ordinance or land use, or just what steps do you want to take so that you're moving the same direction, you know, as those gaps are going to be. And it's been very effective, particularly, you know, where affordable housing can be a hot button issue. And it's not about affordable housing. It's about them being proactive in planning their community instead of just being reactive to the developing community saying, I want to build more single-family homes, or I want to build more apartments, or whatever. And in our communities, now that we've done 8 of them, initial gaps analysis, a lot of the gaps are in the aging-in-place rental market, as well as in the millennials. And of course, everyone's interested in keeping bright young talent, you know, in our communities and stuff too. So that's worth taking a look at.
Zoning binding, I mean, for the ag land, so that it actually does contain residential development in that eastern two-thirds or half of the county?
It does from the county standpoint. The county is, with its conceptual land use strategy and land use map, has really done a good job of holding the line on what we call premature conversion of farmland to other uses, and then also really promoting using that urban corridor and infill development and redevelopment in order to accomplish that population growth. Where, you know, we lose that authority is when it gets annexed to a municipality. And we actually have vast acreages of municipal annexations that happened right before the bust that now, you know, are probably going to be farmed for the next, you know, 20, 30 years. But they show up within a municipal boundary because they were annexed, even though those developments will never happen. And, you know, that's where we have to, you know, graciously kind of remind them or point out, you know, what happened, and an opportunity for redos, you know, is huge to develop those in a different way. But, you know, you have to do that respectfully and graciously, you know, as well. So.
To actually buy land for open space, would it be used for trail design?
Yeah, back in 1994, that was a big hallmark of that plan. In fact, the phrase bloodthirsty open space was even used from the standpoint of, for the first time, the county developed this future open space map as a separate map, which, you know, followed a lot of corridors, but also proposed a lot of connectivity. And then our Forest Preserve began to use that map as their blueprint for land acquisitions. And then over the period, I don't have the slide in this presentation, but over a 15-year period, successfully passed 4 referendums over like $180 million. Even in bad times, to acquire open space following that map. So what that told us is that our citizens, even in down economic times, are very interested in open space and trail connections, and the county's been very proactive in that, both regional trail systems and then working with our park districts.
And I have a great question. We've been working with our planners. I really wanted to see what the return on investment.
Sounds like a good topic for an HIA. but we haven't done a whole lot on that.
No, I think, as Mark said, the HIA that we just did and completed around the local foods was really did that economic homework. And now the challenge will be to actually then measure that out and find the ways to, and that data is not necessarily there ready to just gather together. So we have to create those channels.
And the reason I suggest HIA is that's a great process for really getting everyone to focus in on what are the most important things that you want to measure. Is it health costs? Is it, you know, what the time frame is? And more so than the regular planning process does, how do you get to agree upon what those, you know, return on investment measures are going to be?
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah?
I was just going to make a comment. We're doing an integrated HIA comp plan update for the STEM community I was talking about in Washington. And one of the things we've been trying to do is kind of take that sustainability model and, which I think a lot of people are doing, not to do this across, but to identify indicators up front that are measurable by the officials, hopefully doing things they're already doing. It's not exactly the same thing at all as evaluating like the HIA process or the effectiveness of a process that we're trying to think ahead and put that through both for changes in the built environment and also for behavior. Because our grant, the CTG grant and the principal investigator is really interested in earlier changes in behavior that we can identify, say, through the Parks Department and the Transportation Department, such that we can track earlier changes in behavior. Because I've been thinking, as more of a built environment person, that it's a really long-term thing and how you get at that interim time period when we do have really short staffs and stuff like that.
Utilization,
yeah, almost kind of accidents, injuries, increasing utilization, ridership, and then the food one is a little bit more difficult. There are a lot of things I guess we can measure inside. We're still developing it inside the schools. Also the hospital, so we're in the process of kind of putting all that together.
explore how to, with one of our partners from Northern Illinois University, looking at kind of an observatory concept and looking to see what, not only what secondary data is there, whether it be, you know, burden of disease or quality of life or, you know, year quality of length of life, but really looking to see what primary data could be collected and try to engage our partners, just as we're engaging them in planning, engaging them in how do we develop some of the measures we need for these indicators. So it's a really great question, but it's an ongoing challenge. Paul?
Yeah, just kind of building on that and wanting to ask you about, you know, one of the things we envisioned through the health plan was really bringing the hospitals into this whole piece. And I'm just wondering, you know, how much have you seen in terms of hospital community benefit, either actual resources or interest or intent in trying to get into some of these built environment issues?
Actually, our hospitals, as Paul's referencing, is they actually were part of funding some of the assessment for our community health assessment. And now, as we're moving forward, really aligning some of the goals for what they're doing in their community benefit plans. And I don't think we have the answer yet, Paul. We'll have to see how it plays out. But we definitely do have hospitals at the table, and continuing to be, especially, I would say in our Fit for Kids planning efforts. We did have one of our hospitals apply for one of these mini grants, but the project that they were asking to do had no sustainable policy, built environment impact. And so we really are having to work with those partners, just as we are with other partners, to actually look at the policy impact of the things they want to do. So it is one of our challenges.
Yeah, I just
want
to confirm that the hospitals are paying
No. When we did our community health assessment, which our state does every 5 years at the county level, actually they put resources that they normally use for their own assessment, and we did shared resources to do one community assessment that resulted, though, in data for each of the hospital's service areas. So they got their own data set as well as their own data analysis. And we now have these three planning areas so that the hospitals are very engaged in what we're doing with community health improvement. But more to develop. As we said, this is the challenge.
Because the plan they adapted for their hospitals, part of their plan, have these same goals as the county. So it introduces that built environment. That's one of our challenges ahead, is to make that bridge working with them specifically. We've been, you know, more, you know, around the bush standpoint, suggesting to groups in our community that they approach the hospitals, you know, and look at them as a source for funding for projects that they want to do, because now these are part of the hospitals. Plant. So, you know, we're kind of indirectly drawing the lines, but.
One little bright spot is that our hospitals are all engaged for the first time in a community-wide Plan, Do, Check, Act improvement cycle that will impact the quality of diabetic education. And in that process, we're hearing some of our partners who are actually doing the Plan, Do, Check, Act cycle at the staff level, really looking at, well, what are the healthy access, you know, what are the access points for healthy eating, fruits, vegetables, walking, and those sorts of things. So sometimes it filters up from the grassroots, and it's not just the top down, what do the leaders at the table say. And so that's actually our opportunity as well as our challenge.
About factoring in the continuity piece when you have change of personnel. Can you talk a little bit more about how you integrate the newcomers into the value system and the legacy that you built up in some of these initiatives, and how they, you know, are they hired specifically, I mean, for that, or do you, I think the continuing workshops is one part, but
Well, the brand new planner for the health department, who's been around now, she's not right here, probably 2 years, and she actually was the major author for our health chapter into the 2040 plan. So, I mean, great. And she had interned at the development department before she came on board as a health department. So that was like, okay, easy peasy, right? You have two new planners in your department.
Yeah, it's just a challenge at all levels because of the, you know, the number of different groups, you know, and turnover even just at the county board level, and our county board, which is way too large for a county board, is 24 members and a chairman. Operates under a committee structure, and each of our departments report to different committees. So there's this sort of layer upon layer of, you might have a new chairman for your committee, and then that committee may have new board members who are either new to that committee or maybe new to the county board and county government altogether. And that's just the county piece, you know, and then you get into all the other pieces. So, you know, we kind of have, I guess we could say we're kind of throwing a big blanket, you know, over everybody and hoping that starts to sink in. And then we have to focus on some specific strategic relationships, like with the chairman of those committees or the chair, you know, and members of our specific boards, and, you know, make sure they get it and then begin to work out from there. But it just, you know, it just takes a lot of time. And, you know, and it could change in here. Yeah, telling the story.
And it's the individual as well as some of the more, you know, when we send out the newsletter and we share those bright spots, and then we bring people back to the table. So it's an ongoing. And I was just thinking of your two new planners, Mark, because bright, young, great thinkers, and then to really see, oh, this is how we do it. So that at the staff level, if everyone at the staff level is thinking the same way and having the same focus, and their conversations with their municipal partners or whoever they may interact with, I think that's just as critical as the elected officials. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, really, you guys have been great and interactive and awake, and so we thank you very much.